Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
The secret to catching prize-worthy fish? Fishing like a local. Jonas Knox here with Fishing Booker. The valuable knowledge of a local guide can turn a fishing trip of no bites into the best catch of the day. Go to fishingbooker.com to discover thousands of local fishing charters from all around the world and create your perfect angling adventure with their easy-to-use online booking system. Visit fishingbooker.com and book your trip today. Fishing Booker. Fishing trips made easy. Hey, it's Jonas Knox. Winter is coming. Heavy rain, sleet, snow, and ice. Are your tires up for the challenge? Tread confidently in winter's worst with a set of new tires from Tire Rack. They sell only the best, like the full line of Michelin tires. Go to TireRack.com/sports. Tell them what you drive. Your tires will ship fast and free to you or one of over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Several major stories to dive into as we begin Monday. I hope you guys are having a fantastic start to your week. And if you watched television at all yesterday, you can probably get a sense for what I believe two of the three biggest stories are. Number one, Jordan Spieth now three quarters of the way to completing a career major winning championship. He will be the sixth individual if he can win the PGA championship, which is probably, I would say, maybe the easiest of all of the majors to win. Not in like a necessarily negative fashion, just I don't think that there's any kind of real connection to the PGA championship. When people win it, they think, oh my God, he won the PGA championship. I mean, obviously the Masters comes with a green jacket. The US Open comes with the jug with your name on it. The British Open is the longest and oldest of all of the majors. And then there's kind of the PGA Championship sitting around floating out there. Jordan Spieth and what he can mean to golf and what happened at the 13th hole and the way that he finished that entire round of golf, I think the number one sports story going on right now. The continued drama that exists in the city of Cleveland. Kyrie Irving requests a trade. LeBron James sending out Instagram posts. What is going to end up happening there with the Cleveland Cavaliers? Does any of it matter, given the fact that the Golden State Warriors seem to have driven the rest of the NBA insane? And finally, Game of Thrones, Episode 2, Season 7, last night. Now there's only 5 episodes left. We will talk about that at some point in the show as well. But I want to begin with what I think is the biggest story of the weekend, which was Jordan Spieth. And in particular, I think really this story took off and began and came into its own on Sunday morning, as many of us were sitting around watching this game, watching this tournament, and Jordan Spieth had the ball at the top of a ridge, on the side of a ridge, on the 13th hole. Jordan Spieth tied at that point in time with Matt Kuchar, and he hits one of the worst drives you probably will ever see him hit in his career in a major. Pushes it about 100 yards right. The ball comes to rest on the side of a hill, on a mound, with absolutely no ability to play that shot at all. Jordan Spieth decides to take relief, and so moves back into the, basically like the practice area. And he's in the middle of all the just promotional materials. If you were watching this, it was incredible theater. I mean, he's surrounded by all these different tents, all these different bunch of they have the equipment trucks, like everything. Like he's literally walking around in the middle of the equipment trucks. And even a guy who, like me, who has hit a lot of bad golf shots in his career. In fact, I hit a lot of bad golf shots on Friday. I was like, my God, this is in a really, really difficult position. And so he takes an unplayable lie. And at some point, the announcers are saying, maybe you should just go back to the tee box. Why not just go back to the tee box and hit another shot? Instead, he lines it up, he hits it, and he manages to get out of that hole with a bogey, but he gives up the lead. And so at that point in time, many people on Twitter and certainly on television and anybody watching it is starting to have a little bit of flashbacks to what happened to him at the Masters. And if you remember at the Masters, he had a several-stroke lead when he just completely fell apart, put a couple into the water, and ended up choking away that Masters. I mean, he was about as much close to a lock as you could possibly get. So people start to ask the question, man, maybe Jordan Spieth has kind of started to lose his mental edge. And if you go back, I mean, many people have already forgotten about how dominant Jordan Spieth was in 2015. But at the age of, I guess it would have been, what, 22, 21, whatever the math was on this, he won the Masters and he won the U.S. Open back-to-back in 2015. And then in the British Open that year, he nearly won. He came in tied for fourth, and then he came in second at the PGA. That's a remarkable season that Jordan Spieth had in 2015, now in retrospect. Again, he won the Masters, he won the U.S. Open, he came in fourth at the British Open, and he came in second at the PGA. And then he followed that up the next year by blowing the Masters, and it never really seemed like last year he recovered from blowing the Masters. Now that he's won the British Open, he's won 3 out of 4. But before he won the British Open yesterday, you could sit back and say, uh-oh, is this guy going to blow this situation? And then he put together an unbelievable finish. In the final several holes, he went 5 under par. In 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, the final 5 holes, included there was an eagle. He went 5 under par to run away with the tournament. And so from that moment where he's standing on the side of a hill, and by the way, it took him, I think, 25 minutes to hit a shot because there was all the uncertainty about where his ball was. It had to be found, and then he had to decide what to do. He had to take an unplayable lie. He had to move back into the middle of the semi-trucks and everything else. I mean, it was insane television. If you were watching this live, it took him 25 minutes to hit a shot. And when he's standing over the ball, you're thinking, man, if he hits a bad shot here, this tournament for him is probably going to end. And instead, he hits a pretty decent shot, and then he follows it up. He goes up and down, bogeys, and it was one of the most remarkable things that I've ever seen because you're having a flashback to Jan Vandeveld. If you remember Jan Vandeveld, he was the Frenchman who completely fell apart on the 18th hole and ended up choking away his opportunity to win the British Open. And remember, he took his shoes off. And then later, in retrospect, he came back and played that same hole with just his putter, and he got a bogey, which is remarkable. Again, he just got up there with his putter and got a bogey. What did he get, a triple? I think he got a triple on that hole when he choked away his opportunity to win the championship outright. He had the British Open won at 18 and just fell apart. Next thing you know, he's got his shoes off, he's standing in the water, and everything kind of goes awry. But man, what a win for Jordan Spieth. And then in a larger context, is this going to help golf? What does golf need? There's a lot of difficulty going on right now for a variety of different sports as there's a lot more entertainment options. I wrote about this yesterday on OutKick. Do you know that SportsCenter, this is an amazing stat, SportsCenter last week was beaten head-to-head by Teletubbies 8 of its 9 times that it aired on ESPN. And it was beaten by Teletubbies without that many people watching. This is an amazing stat. Like, people are choosing to spend their time in totally different ways than they would have in years past. SportsCenter aired 9 times last Thursday. And this is representative of the larger issue, not a one-day just kind of snapshot. This is what's actually going on. SportsCenter aired 9 times last week on Thursday. 8 of those times more people watched the 9:30 airing of Teletubbies, 9:30 a.m. airing of Teletubbies on Nickelodeon. And what's that show, Mutt and something, Mutt and Stuff? Mutt and Stuff, which I don't know, even though I've got kids, on Nickelodeon. Mutt and Stuff on Nickelodeon tripled every SportsCenter viewing. No one is watching ESPN outside of really popular sporting events. Their actual original programming has never been deader. And I think a big part of that is because there's so many other entertainment options out there, and what ESPN is providing is not really striking people as must-see television. Golf has got a similar issue. NASCAR has got a similar issue. Any sport that isn't completely in the mainstream right now, it's like people don't pay attention to it anymore. So Jordan Spieth, is it necessary for there to be some level of dominance from him? Now, the Tiger Woods era is over, right? Tiger's never going to be back in any kind of significant fashion. So golf has to come to grips with that. And there are many good young golfers, right? Rory McIlroy's a good young golfer. Jordan Spieth's a good young golfer. Ricky Fowler. There are a lot of young guys who, it appears, Jason Day, have the ability to win at a high level. But are any of them dominant or interesting enough that they actually drive your attention? Maybe Spieth can be that guy. I don't know. He's not 24 years old yet. I thought the most entertaining and funny part of maybe the entire tournament was right after he won, when his caddy is standing in the kind of just room where you go and signify and sign your scorecard. And as Spieth is walking by, he gives him a ball tap. Did you guys see that? Just absolutely fantastic. Totally, I called it the Pearl Harbor of ball taps. There's no way that he could have been prepared for that ball tap at that moment in time. It's a majestic, august situation there as Jordan Spieth goes out to accept his win. His caddy's just standing there. Next thing you know, Jordan Spieth goes straight ball tap, and his caddy was completely undefended. The Pearl Harbor of ball taps. And that was, to me, a little bit of a window into what Jordan Spieth's personality is. Because as is, we don't necessarily get that much. You know, he made the shot from the bunker and went crazy in celebration just a couple weeks ago. And that was something where you thought, okay, maybe we've got a really somewhat of a sense for what he's actually like. Tiger Woods captivated people with his dominance. I think probably we need to see the same thing from Jordan Spieth.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Last night, we got to get on this too. Last night, got to call out this Shark Week. I watched the Discovery Channel. I watched the Shark versus Michael Phelps. Maybe the worst designed show in the history of television. You told me that Michael Phelps was going to race a great white. I'm not a television expert, but I do think you could put a great white and Michael Phelps side by side with like some sort of plexiglass between them and allow them to actually race and be able to see them at each other at the same times. Instead, we get Michael Phelps against a CGI-generated great white shark. I was not pleased with this. It went off right before Game of Thrones started. I had my kids all gathered around. Everybody wanted to watch Michael Phelps race the great white shark. Maybe the worst television production I've ever seen. I wish we could wake up whoever the producer was of that show, wherever he is in the world, and make him come on and defend his show. There's zero way that he could defend his show. Let's bring in the crew. Jason Martin, were you with me? Did you watch Phelps versus the Great White? Jason Martin? Did he vanish? Have we lost him?
He must be busy.
Yeah, he's screening phone calls.
All right, let's go to L.A. Did you guys watch Phelps versus the Great White?
Now, I didn't watch it live, Clay. I did, you know, research it to watch the lowlights afterwards. it looked ridiculous.
They stretched this program out for so long. If you didn't watch it, the concept was they sold us for months. Michael Phelps is going to race a great white shark. I guarantee you we talked about this. This is perfect Animal Thunderdome. And I was like, okay, this sounds somewhat interesting. I mean, the great white is faster. But the key here to Phelps versus the great white is, do we know whether or not the great white knows he's in a race, right? I mean, that's the ultimate question. We know Phelps knows he's in a race, and they gave him like a shark fin so he could swim a little bit faster and everything else. And so I was genuinely intrigued to see what was going to happen here. They stretched this program out for an hour. It's Michael Phelps in South Africa in the water off the coast. And you think to yourself, okay, I want to see what's going to happen here because there were great whites everywhere. I can't believe that Michael Phelps even got into the water there. It's freezing, 56 degrees, I think they said, off the coast. And ultimately what they did was create a CGI version of the great white, which looked as bad as the original Jaws. If you go back and watch the original Jaws movie now, the special effects in Jaws, now that it's what, like 30 years old or whatever it is, isn't Jaws like...
Even older, I think.
Is Jaws even older than 30? Like,
we'll
whatever the age
up,
is for Jaws. Obviously, I think Jaws is the most influential movie of all time in terms of the impact that Jaws has. Every single person who goes into the ocean now thinks about a shark eating them. And I don't know that would have if that would have happened if Jaws is never made.
42 years old.
Jaws is 42 years old?
Yep.
My God. So Jaws is 42 years old now. If you watch that movie, it's still a classic, but all of the Jaws kind of all of the special effects are atrocious. That's what this looked like, except it's been 42 years since then. The special effects generated shark that Michael Phelps was racing was awful.
How
by the way, he lost
to,
by 2 seconds.
How lied to did you feel?
Totally.
Yeah,
I felt
what
like
a
my,
rip.
I mean, to start Shark Week that way, this entire thing that Discovery Channel does for Shark Week, to start with Phelps versus the Great White and have it be as much of a joke as it was, I think that the entire Discovery Channel should have to apologize to everyone who watched. I mean, really, I don't know what they paid Michael Phelps to do this, but I hope it was millions and millions of dollars because he didn't even do anything. I mean, it was a total joke. I can't believe it's been 42 years since Jaws was made. Jason Martin, did you watch that? Did you watch the Phelps versus the shark?
Yeah, I didn't watch it live, which was great. I was able to watch it at about 10:30 last night, and I was able to get through it in about 20 minutes because I could kind of
I don't know how it took
to
you
see
20
what the
minutes.
Point was. Well, I mean, it was probably more like 10, honestly. It was. I figured out what they were doing relatively quickly, so then it was very, very easy to get to the end. And I guess the question of how does the shark know he's in a race is he doesn't, so there's not going to be a race. So we're going to do all this weird math. And that was real entertaining, Shark Week. Let's bring out math and a bunch of analytics and stuff as if we're watching sports science and then have Michael Phelps just swim by himself. That was awful.
I know, but here's the other thing.
It was false advertising, too. That was not what anybody had talked about for, you know, 6-7 weeks since this was announced.
We already know how fast a great white shark can swim, just like we know how fast a cheetah can swim. You know, or run or whatever, you know, right? They already know.
Fast.
They already have the footage to know how fast animals can go. So why do we need to know? Like, the shark is faster than Michael Phelps. The only question was, if they were side by side, what would happen? Would the shark stop and look and think about trying to eat Michael Phelps? I'm not saying that they had to be literally side by side in a pool, but that's what I would have tried to do. Put them in salt water, put the great white shark next to Michael Phelps, and let them race. Have like a huge plexiglass between the two of them. That would have been really entertaining to see. It would also have been a little bit scary. Instead, Michael Phelps, it was a total disaster. I can't believe that they would even attempt to make that and try to sell it to us. Especially with all the lead up and all the attention they got. Just inexcusable.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Rough night for the Sand Snakes. Let's go back around Game of Thrones. 25 million people or whatever it is watch it every week. It's the best show on television for the summer. We're now 2 episodes in out of 7. I'll start with you, Jason Martin. What rating would you give Game of Thrones season 7 so far?
I can't go higher than about a B minus. That's where I had the premiere, and that's where I had last night. The ending, to me, was not my favorite part, even though that was certainly the action it needed because so much of last night felt like a place setter, which is the same thing I felt about the first one. And when you only have 7 episodes in a season, that seems a little bit crazy that there wasn't more going on. But I actually thought the conversation between Dany and Varys was the most intriguing and most interesting that I heard, just about Varys being somebody that you can't just buy, that he's actually going to support who he believes in. That, to me, was very, very interesting. There was a lot of fluff and a lot of filler and a lot of, all right, well, we're going to get to this soon, and we're going to do this soon, and we're going to tell you this, and this person's going to learn this about this character, but not a ton was happening. And then the thing at the end was definitely the 5 minutes that I think a large quadrant of the audience needed to really feel good about the episode. But I can't go higher than about a B-minus so far on these first two episodes. They've been good, but they have not been what I would consider to be great by any means, especially when you look at the bar that this series has set in its high points.
Yeah, you know, I would probably give it a B. I thought the opening of season 7 with Arya killing off all the Freys was pretty fantastic. And I thought, I did think that the unexpected nature of Euron Greyjoy's attack on in season, you know, at the end of that episode kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Yara is still alive? Yara is still alive, right?
Yes, because we didn't see her die. Like, when you don't see somebody die in TV, it's like they're designing it to make it look like, all right, well, her days are numbered. But it seems like she's probably more valuable being alive right now.
We never saw Stannis die.
Very true.
But we know Stannis Baratheon is dead, at least we seem to believe, although we've never actually seen him. And to me, on Game of Thrones, typically, when you don't see a guy officially die, then he comes back, i.e. the Hound. What would you guys say? Let's go out to L.A., Justin and Danny G. What would you give the show so far through two episodes?
I mean, relative to everything else on TV, you got to give it an A. But I guess just relative to what Game of Thrones has done in the past, I would go with a B, B+. My favorite part of the episode, at least one of my favorite parts, was actually all the Arya scenes. I love the Arya scenes. And then,
by the way, the nude scene has to be your favorite part of the episode if you're a straight man.
Well,
I mean,
Natalie
how do you
Emanuel,
pronounce her name?
Natalie Emanuel, who we already knew was really hot from The Fast and the Furious. Yes. Like, she's unbelievable.
She's gorgeous.
The charts hot.
That was a great scene. I mean, as far as storyline goes and dialogue, obviously that's the best scene. But her reunion with her direwolf and that whole dialogue, I found to be, you know,
see, I thought
really
that was
good.
Interesting, but I thought it was totally, like, what do we need that for?
Well,
what's
because
the benefit?
There's a lot of that last night, Clay.
Here's what it is. I think what happened was, so she realizes that's her direwolf, and then she asks the direwolf to come with her back to Winterfell, and the direwolf decides, you know, no, I don't want to do that.
Direwolf gave her the Heisman.
Yeah, and then and Arya says, that's not you, which harkens back to a conversation she had with her dad in season 1.
I get that, but why is it necessary?
Because
why do I need to know the mental processes
of the
direwolf?
To show that wolf, that's why. Well, because, to show that wolf on camera.
Well, I think what's going to happen is it's going to make her realize that this isn't her going back to Winterfell to have a nice family reunion. She's going to decide, you know what, I am going to go back to my mission of killing Cersei. So I think she's going to change course now.
Yeah,
because
okay.
Of that meeting.
That if there's a course change correction from her there, then and I'm going to write, I'll do my column on this. That's my immediately after the show on Facebook Live, after Game of Thrones on Facebook Live and Periscope, I go live and discuss for those of you who are huge Game of Thrones fans. And that's my only thought, is that it has to have led to some kind of pivot point for her. Otherwise, the only purpose of showing the wolf is just to show the wolf. Like, they could have literally had that scene at any point in the last couple of years. I will say this. What about the fat kid? Like, I don't know what that kid's been doing, but he's gotten a lot fatter since the last time we saw him.
Talking about Sam?
No, the kid who's like the
bread guy.
Bread guy. What's amazing to me about
bread?
Yeah, what's amazing to that's a sign you shouldn't be eating that much bread. What's amazing to me is they always end up in that same like crappy bread diner. Like there are thousands of miles in all of the Game of Thrones lands, and somehow everybody just crosses back by each other at this bread place. It must
there's
be really
just
good
one bar.
Bread.
There's just one bakery.
There's one bakery
in, like 4,000 miles
in all the land. And everybody ends up there. Like, people get killed there. There's always these unexpected, you know, like, seeing people there. There's, like, one place to eat in all of the land of Game of Thrones, and it's that fat kid's place. No, I wasn't talking about Sam. Like, that scene where he starts to pull the grayscale off was...
Yeah, that was tough.
...really disgusting. And why would you only give him, like, two swigs of rum? Like, isn't that a knockdown, drag out? You need to be insanely drunk.
Well, how much could he get? I'm not sure Sam had, like, that much stroke to be able to grab that much rum. Like, he might have had to steal that, like, from next to somebody's pee pan.
Okay, so I don't think that in any way impacts him. Like, if you gave me two shots and then said, okay, now I'm going to pull your skin off, like, I don't think that would help me. I don't think the two shots of alcohol I did would really make that much of a difference in terms of the overall pain that I was having to withstand there.
I agree. I'd probably had the guy knock me out.
I'm like, we're now 2/7 of the way through the season, and I really want to know what are we going to get resolved here? Because there's only now, if you do the math, there's only 11 more episodes left of this show. And frankly, I don't know why they didn't go ahead and tape the final 6 episodes at the same time they were doing the 7, so we didn't have much of a wait. I'm really kind of fascinated to see whether we're going to get a ton of evolution here, or are we just going to continue kind of percolating along at this slow kind of rate? Well, we will get next week, it appears, is something that we've been waiting for 7 years, which is Jon Snow and Daenerys in the same scene, which is pretty wild to think about. They've never actually met. Those two characters have been on such a different career character arc that we've never actually seen them in the same scene. They're both fantastic actors. I'm actually kind of waiting for that. Going to be combustible, I would hope, when they actually end up in the same scene next week.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
What's going to happen with the Cavs? What's going to happen with LeBron James? I feel like this is just bad drama at this point. It's like season 4 of Melrose Place. There's nothing left that they can possibly create to be a dramatic series. Everybody's already slept with everybody else. You already had somebody die. There's like nothing else you can do. It's like the point in a sitcom where you create a random kid. You're like, all right, what are we going to do now? Well, let's have a kid. And then remember on Growing Pains how like Chrissy went from being like a baby to like 6 years old in 1 year, and we were just supposed to believe that happened? Do you remember that? Like, they get so desperate. They're like, we got to have a kid. And then you get so desperate that the kid's got to grow up too, because most kids aren't like the Michelle Tanners of the world and can't be entertaining actors and actresses, unlike our boy in the studio there. Not everybody can pull off the kid at Liar Liar, right? Child actor, going to be really difficult, add a kid. I feel like that's what's going on with the NBA right now. The Golden State Warriors have so dominated the world of the NBA that everybody else is just panicked trying to find a way to be remotely competitive with them. And basically everybody's recognized, you know what, we have no shot. The Golden State Warriors are a more prohibitive favorite to win in the title in 2018 than any team has ever been in the history of any team sport in American life. That's how big of a favorite they are. Now, yeah, sure, it's possible that Kevin Durant can run into Steph Curry and they can bang knees and they can both be out for the season, and then there can be NBA drama. But lacking substantial injuries on the Golden State Warriors, the entire season doesn't matter. And so now we get Kyrie Irving requesting a trade. And this happened on, what, Friday night, I believe it was? Or I think it was Friday night.
Yep.
That it finally went public. And I've been arguing it for a while. If the Cavs, and I'm going to circle back around here and say it again, if the Cavs were smart, if the owner, Dan Gilbert, of the Cleveland Cavaliers were smart, he would trade LeBron James. Because, and I'll walk through my process again, because people are like, oh, you're crazy. There's a lot of method to my craziness here. There's method to my madness. All right, let's begin with what I think is the most important question. Can your team win a championship? The Cleveland Cavaliers just got run by the Golden State Warriors. Just got dominated in 5 games. The only game they won was the one where they put up maybe the greatest offensive performance in the history of the NBA playoffs. That's how good they had to play to win one game against the Warriors. The Warriors now still haven't played that many games together, right? I mean, what's crazy about this is the Warriors are still getting used to being a team. They haven't even played that many games yet with Kevin Durant. What have they played? Like, maybe one full season now? Maybe a little bit less because Durant missed so many games for so long. They're going to get better, is my point. The Warriors' ceiling is higher than what they performed at this past year. And oh, by the way, they just went 16-1 in the playoffs for the best record in the history of the NBA playoffs. So their ceiling is higher. Meanwhile, the Cavs, I don't think they can get much better. I think the Cavs are basically what they are. I'm not sure they win the East. And so Kyrie Irving now requesting a trade, the drama that continues to surround LeBron James, Kyrie Irving wants to be the guy. And he feels like with LeBron James keeping the ball in his hand as a basically point forward, that he doesn't have the ability to do everything that he believes he can if he had the ball in his hand the entire game. Kyrie Irving is really impossible to defend as a scoring point guard. Now, the Cavs statistically are a lot worse when he's on the floor than they are when LeBron is on the floor by himself. So I don't think there's any doubt that it would make the team worse. But Kyrie Irving is young. He's 25 years old. He's 7 years younger than LeBron James. He's under contract for multiple years. I don't think that the Cavs are going to trade Kyrie Irving either. But if you were going to trade one of your big three, I don't think there's any doubt that you trade LeBron James. So number one, when you walk through this process, the question is, are you capable of winning a championship this coming year? The answer is no. I don't think there's any way, barring injury, that the Cavs are able to beat the Warriors. If that is true, then question two becomes, do you believe LeBron James is going to re-up and finish his career in Cleveland? I think the answer is no. LeBron James is going to bolt on the city of Cleveland at the end of next year. And so once you have worked through those two options, you're not going to win a title and LeBron's going to leave you high and dry. The question I was asking is the same one that I think more people should be asking. Everybody, it's fascinating to me. Everybody sees Paul George at the Indiana Pacers. And they say, boy, you don't want to end up like the Indiana Pacers with a guy like Paul George who just rides off into the sunset and you get nothing for him. You have to trade him. You don't want what happened to the Oklahoma City Thunder with Kevin Durant to happen to your franchise. So everybody's making that argument constantly about Paul George and the Pacers. I'm the only person that I've heard making that argument about LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. When LeBron James rides off into the sunset next year and heads straight to LA to be a member of the Lakers and puts together another super team to finish his career, first of all, LeBron is going to turn 33 this year. I know Federer just won a title at 35, about to be 36. So let's be completely fair to LeBron James and say he's got 3 years of being better. He's not going to be better than he is right now. The best case scenario for LeBron James is that his descent is slow and not precipitous. In other words, he's a good player and he doesn't just go off the reservation and suddenly fall down and become the seventh or eighth best player in the NBA. The best case scenario for LeBron James is that it's a long, slow descent back down to being just an okay guy. And maybe that's the case. But at the age of 33, LeBron James has probably only got like 3 years left. You don't want to end up, what I think is going to end up happening, it's going to end up like Kobe. LeBron James is going to have a long farewell goodbye tour, and he's going to be way overpaid relative to his talent when he's 37 or 38 years old. It just happens. Age is undefeated. There's nobody out there who's gotten better as they aged. 33 years old, he'll be this December. I think LeBron is basically done. I don't think LeBron will win another championship. I think his career is effectively over. The only way that he wins another championship in my mind is if late in his career, he's able to be not the number one guy. So if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you're sitting around here and you're thinking, okay, well, we've got Kyrie Irving and we've got Kevin Love under contract. Why can't we try to clear up some space, go get a couple of guys whose contracts are going to be up soon and free ourselves up to make a run at a big-time free agent to try to pair with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love? You're probably still not going to win a title, but you're at least going to be in the ballpark in the years ahead. Has anybody come around on my idea? All three of you, I think, thought I was crazy when I started saying the Cavs should trade LeBron James a month ago. That was before the Kyrie Irving news came out. Has anybody changed their mind? Anybody now on the, you know what, maybe Clay is not insane. They should trade LeBron James. If you have to trade somebody, no way it should be Kyrie Irving. Because what's going to happen if you trade Kyrie Irving is you're probably going to end up getting somebody like Carmelo Anthony, who also is going to be a free agent, and the Cavs are just going to be done, right? Because then Carmelo walks away, then LeBron James walks away, and you're left with Kevin Love and J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, and you're talking about a team that wins 15 games. I mean, the Cavs are close to dying as a franchise the moment LeBron James walks away. You might as well get something for him. You might as well take advantage of the fact that you've got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love under contract. That avoids you becoming a disaster of a team and it allows you to have some flexibility in the years ahead to be able to go try to get a good free agent. Anybody on my team, anybody think that makes sense?
No, Clay. I could have stopped you like 7 minutes ago, honestly, because there are three guys in the league where this take just can't be made, and LeBron is one of them. The other two are Carmelo and Dirk, because he's got a no-trade clause. It's that simple. There are three guys in the NBA with no-trade clause. And he said that he's not going to wait.
Yeah, but
that was the report that came out yesterday.
That's what they always – first of all, that's ESPN reporting it. Secondly, that's what everybody always says. I just don't buy into that.
You don't buy that LeBron's going to just stay for the entire season and then leave? Boy, I
do.
No,
I believe that LeBron James
thought he was going to waive his no-trade clause.
Would agree to have his no-trade clause waived if he can end up in a place where he wants to go.
I don't see it. I don't see it. This is not the same as Durant and all that. Like, it would be in a perfect world, but because LeBron's had eight seasons and current team 4 years and he's eligible for this, he can do as he pleases. And I don't think for a second that he's going to waive his no-trade clause
at all.
The
play
that
could make sense.
Exactly right.
You could get rid of two bad contracts with the Lakers, and LeBron James could go to the Lakers and free up all the salary cap space right now.
I just don't think there's a chance in hell it happens.
That's the play that makes sense. You've got an awful contract still left with Luol Deng, right, on the Lakers, and I believe, am I correct in this, Jordan Clarkson also has a big deal. You could trade both of those guys to the Cavs. You would clear up those awful contracts that they signed with the Lakers. Then LeBron goes to the Lakers. You potentially could go ahead and make a move to try to get Carmelo Anthony too, and then they get there a year ahead of when we expected them to get there.
Why would the Cavs do that?
Because LeBron's going to leave?
I would say you keep LeBron as long as you possibly can, honestly, if you're the Cavs, because you're still going to sell out every time he's out there. You're not going to do that once he leaves. You're not going to win with him. You're not going to win without him. So I'd rather not win with him and have a better chance, go deeper in the playoffs. Again, I think it's a moot point anyway, but I don't think there's any benefit at all for the Cavs doing this. Again, you have to let those fans believe he's going to stay there until he leaves. The reason he's going to leave, it looks like, and I have come around to that belief, is because Dan Gilbert is just that pathetic an owner and that bad. Like, the difference between him and James Dolan simply is that he's actually had LeBron James and has been able to win basketball games.
So
he runs people off.
Yes, you can say he's run people off, but they are so much in salary cap jail that it doesn't matter what kind of owner he is. Like, nobody can make a move. They've overpaid for so much mediocre talent now. They've given Tristan Thompson to – I mean, they did what LeBron James asked them to do. They put together the team that LeBron asked them to put together, and as a result, they have no – financial ability to make moves. It doesn't, you could trade right now Luol Deng, who still has 3 years. Am I correct in that? Does he still have 3 years left on his contract? He still has 3 years left on his contract, and you could get rid of Jordan Clarkson. Both of those guys are drastically overpaid. That would allow you to get LeBron James to the Lakers. And then you would have Lonzo Ball, you'd have Brandon Ingram, you'd have LeBron James, and you potentially would have salary cap room to go get somebody else. Or you sit there for a year, let LeBron basically live the life, doesn't have to play in the postseason, and next thing you know, he's able to go back out and redo the team. Now, maybe LeBron just wants to stay in Cleveland, and maybe they're going to be crappy, and the entire Cavaliers franchise is just going to fall apart around him. But to me, that's a trade that would make total sense for LeBron, because then he can get two bad contracts off the books for the Lakers and free up so much salary cap room going forward. I mean, there's not a single Lakers fan out there, I would imagine, right, who thinks that Luol Deng is worth $18 million a year for each of the next 3 years. Get him out of there. Get Jordan Clarkson out of there, and that's $28 million. Let's go out to L.A. You guys are with me that you believe LeBron James is going to be a future Laker because you're delusional Laker fans. But are you also with me that it's time to make a trade? Like, LeBron, if you have to choose between trading Kyrie Irving or LeBron James, I think the most likely outcome is that nothing happens, by the way. I think all this talk, oh, Kyrie Irving's gone public, he wants to be traded, everything else. I think all this talk, the most likely outcome is nothing changes and that we end up with the same Cleveland Cavaliers team right now, basically, that we do at the start of the season. But if you're going to trade someone, if you have to choose between trading Kyrie Irving or LeBron James, I think it's a no-brainer you trade LeBron James.
I do agree that, you know, this makes sense, Los Angeles does, for LeBron, the iconic brand and LeBron's brand. It all blends together, and there's word that his wife and his wife's mom and his mom, they all love L.A. They want to be here. But I just don't see, because of the relationship with Dan Gilbert and LeBron, I don't see any way possible that Gilbert does anything LeBron would like and LeBron does anything that would help Gilbert either. I think he just rides out this last year and goes out on better terms with his hometown, because it would imagine the backlash that Gilbert would get if he dealt off LeBron right now. I don't think I don't think Gilbert would put himself in that position right now.
I think what you have to say, well, you're trying to free up some salary cap room for a couple of years down the road to make some trades, right? I mean, you have to, in order to make the trade, you have to get somebody who's somewhat close to LeBron James's salary.
Yeah, so that part would be great for the Lakers, but I think
that's my point.
Gilbert would have to be like, look, I'm going to get Ingram, the one piece that Magic and the others in the Lakers front office don't want to deal. He's the one guy they don't want, besides Lonzo, of course. He's the one player, Brandon Ingram. Ingram is the one guy going in before the draft. They said, look, he's off limits. So that's the one guy that I could see maybe a team like the Cavs getting so they could at least have something to sell to their fans. But just a couple of bad contracts, no way.
I think
their heads would blow up.
Are going to so come off the Cavs this year, I don't think they're going to win the East. I think the team is going to stay the same, and I think the wheels are just going to completely come off. And I think that, first of all, they weren't that good in the regular season last year, where they go 51-31. I think that they probably will go 47 and whatever the math is on that, 47 and 30. I can't even do the math. That's always tough for me. Add up to 82. So they're going to win four less games. 47 and 35.
Yeah, at one point, you had them getting ousted in the first round of the playoffs.
I think I said they were going to be competitive against the Pacers, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think they're going to have a collapse a lot like the last year that LeBron was in Cleveland, when they lost to the Celtics and LeBron took his jersey off and walked out and we never saw him in a Cavs uniform again. I think the wheels are coming off of this year's Cavs team. And if I were looking at trying to manage this team, I think when LeBron rides off into the sunset, and I think he's going to do that at the end of the year, then whatever you do, you can't trade Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, because if LeBron goes west, how much worse is the talent in the East going to be? Like, that's the one thing I would say that I don't necessarily know that I buy LeBron going west, because I think LeBron wants to be able to argue, oh, I went to 10 straight finals or whatever it was, even if he didn't win very many of them. We'll talk about this. We'll take your calls, 877-996-6369. Am I crazy for saying that the Cavs should be exploring trying to trade LeBron James? If Kyrie Irving is saying he wants to be traded, and you've got multiple years left on Kyrie Irving's deal, so you know that you've got him locked in for years ahead, and probably with the Supermax, if you keep him there, you could keep him there for the rest of his career, at least as a high-end player. Why would you risk giving up Kyrie Irving when LeBron James is probably going to leave your franchise at the end of this year? I think you have to explore trading LeBron James. I think you need to make it a Herschel Walker-like deal. Try to put together an unbelievable blockbuster package. See if it can happen. Maybe multiple teams are involved.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
The Cavs' ongoing drama. I am so bored of the Cavs' ongoing drama. I think that you guys out there listening are bored of the Cavs' ongoing drama, because I don't think there's that many people who care about Kyrie Irving. And I think everybody's of the opinion that the Warriors are basically going to win the title. And I feel like people are tapped out on the NBA drama, because there was a lot of off-season drama, and most of it didn't end up changing anything. You go look at the odds makers, and they say, oh, yeah, all these different guys changing teams, whether it was Gordon Hayward going to the Celtics, whether it was Chris Paul going to the Rockets, whether it was Paul George to the Oklahoma City Thunder, none of it changed really the odds. And the Warriors remain a prohibitive favorite. Is it Jordan Spieth? Is he intriguing enough to bring in the casual golf fan? Are there people out there who are like, you know what? I'll watch the PGA Championship. I'll watch that because I'm curious whether Jordan Spieth at the age of 24 is going to become the sixth golfer to have won every leg of the majors in golf. Are there people who are interested enough in Jordan Spieth that he brings in the casual fan? Is it the absolute calamity, the disgrace that the Great White Shark versus Michael Phelps was, or is it Game of Thrones? There are four options that I will give you right now. What do you think both yourself and the audience as a whole are most interested in? And by the way, if you want to vote, maybe I need to put up a poll question on OutKick. You can find me at Clay Travis. Which of those four do you think the average listener for us is the most interested in? I think it's fair to say that those are the four biggest stories of the day, right? Which of those four do you think people would most like us to talk about? In addition, they probably answer is probably just Animal Thunderdome. But which of those four do you think people would most like us to talk about? I start with you, Jason Martin.
Maybe the Cavs. I want to talk about Spieth here in a second, but maybe the Cavs, because I do think everything and anything, small or big, that happens to that particular franchise has the chance to affect the most recognizable name and face in American sports. The biggest star in sports is LeBron James. So the same way we talk about Kaepernick and all of these kinds of things driving numbers despite how boring they seem, because this could affect LeBron James's future, I think that that becomes paramount, and it does sort of move the needle a little bit.
I don't think now, it moves the needle one bit. I don't think this story about Kyrie Irving. Well, because it's, first of all, it's July. So
yeah, we were talking about it in June and May and every. I mean, LeBron James.
I think what's moving the needle in July right now? I think people are bored of the LeBron James story. Like, I thought maybe people will come in and be really interested on this, but people on Twitter don't seem to care. People on the callers don't seem to care. Like, I think people are tired of the LeBron James story, and I don't think the Kyrie Irving angle of, oh, I want to demand a trade. Now, obviously, it happened on Friday. So I think people have also had like 2 days to discuss the Kyrie Irving thing. I don't think people care. What about L.A.? Do you think people care? Like, of those four, which of those four do you think people care about the most? I'll tell you what I think. I think Game of Thrones is by far, like, at water cooler talk, even among sports fans, I think Game of Thrones will be number one on this list. Like, if I'm ranking these four for what I think, what you will talk about with your buddies at work today, I think Game of Thrones is number one on this list. I think the Shark versus Michael Phelps is number two on this list. I think maybe LeBron, Kyrie's number three, and I think Jordan Spieth is number four. If I am ranking those stories as in, like, what's your average dude who's listening to us in all 50 states when they get into work, I think that Shark versus Michael Phelps in Game of Thrones is an unquestioned one and two. I think that there's zero doubt that the average guy is going to go in and be like, either talking about Game of Thrones or the Great White Shark against Michael Phelps. I think that those dunk on every other story.
Right, I agree now with you, Clay. Like, you didn't let me quite finish. I was saying for our audience, but if you really look at it, those are things that we don't talk about all that often. That Phelps thing became news because of how terrible it was. So for a day or two, yes, that is something people are going to want to talk about. Game of Thrones, we have 7 weeks to do that, and then we move on for another year, and then we get six more, and then we're done. That is different than LeBron James. I'm talking about in terms of being the biggest story. For me, because you asked two different questions, our audience and me, what I'm most interested in is Jordan Spieth, because I tweeted out yesterday after
that's
he
number
won,
four on the list of me. I don't think people care about golf.
Well, this
at
is
all.
Me.
Like, I love it. I watched it. I watched the British Open. I went and golfed on Friday afternoon. Put up like 110. I love golf, but I think that Jordan Spieth does not move the needle, even when he's winning. Now, I will say the way that he won on Sunday, that 13th hole, even if you're not interested in golf, like, that drama associated with the 13th hole was fantastic television. Him walking back among all the different like training areas, he's standing in the middle of a bunch of semi trucks, like trying to figure out where he's going to take a ball drop. The fact that he can't see anything, that he was tied at the time with Matt Kuchar at -8. That 13th hole was about as entertaining as golf can get, because you literally had no idea what was going to happen. Even
well,
if you're not a
point.
Golfer, that was high theater. But
that's,
I don't think Jordan Spieth moves the needle at all. Like, we'll look at those ratings, and a million people will have been watching the British Open compared to 25 million who watched the Game of Thrones.
I mean, that I don't disagree with that. But the tweet I put out was, golf needs him to win 3 of 5 majors, maybe 10 of the next 16. And then people were like, oh, he's not Tiger. He's not bringing in a new audience. He's the best chance golf has. Look at the other guys that are out there. Day, Dustin, Rory. They're interesting, but they don't have what this guy has in terms of appeal. And one of the reasons why is what you just mentioned. He's erratic and extreme.
he's either as good as we've ever seen or he's absolutely terrible. Remember back-to-back quads at Augusta, one that basically cost him a green jacket the year before. Like, he has a putter that can get as clutch hot as Tiger Woods could, which was the key to what he did, being able to get up and down. But he's got this Phil Mickelson thing about him where what do you really care the most about when it comes to Phil? You care about him hitting it off a hospitality tent at Wingfoot and blowing the U.S. Open and finding a way to get out of the pine straw on 13 at Augusta. Like, that's kind of what Spieth has to me. Like, does that mean anything for the bottom line? I don't know. But if there is anybody that has a chance to move the needle right now in golf, it is Jordan Spieth. He's the only one where you have all these incredible highs, and then you have the lows, and then he has this deal where he's American and he's wired a little differently. You don't see a whole lot of nut taps right before you're signing your PGA scorecard.
that made him so affable, really funny.
And so likable and so just, oh, he's just like us. That's the kind of thing we would do, you know, coming off the 18th green to our boys. Like, that kind of thing is, it's the burgeoning of somebody that might be able to move the needle. Can he move the needle right now? No, but I don't think golf has anybody that can move the needle because Tiger was such a force that we've never seen before. That's why. Like, there's not ever been a Tiger Woods. I don't know that there ever will be, but Jordan Spieth's the best chance we got right now.
Well, Tiger Woods, so much of what he did was he represented something different, and you could tell by just looking at him, right? I mean, that's a big part of Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods brought in people to watch golf who've never played golf before. And if you remember back in the day when Tiger Woods was kind of at his apex, kind of really taking off, they overbuilt golf courses because of Tiger Woods, right? They were like, oh, we're going to have all these more people who are interested in playing golf now. And they built all these golf courses, and now a bunch of them have gone bankrupt because they're like, man, you know what? First of all, golf's a hard sport. So your average weekend duffer who went out, they're like, man, I don't want to go play for 4.5 or 5 hours, 18 holes, and then suck like that. I mean, golf takes a long time. If I were designing golf to make it more palatable to modern society, I would make it like a standard round 9 holes. Because you can play 9 holes in like 2.5 hours. You go to some of these courses, if you're not a private club member, the awfulest thing about golf is how crowded some of these public courses are that you get on. You can have like an 18-hole round that takes 5 hours. Like, you can literally be out there waiting on every shot. It can take forever. It's miserable. And so if you play like 2.5 hours, I think that's kind of an ideal length of time. Like, an average movie, that's about as long as most people want to be able to go out there and commit. But I do think that those four, let's bring in L.A., of those four, what do you think our audience cares about the most? The four options that I've got out there: the Kyrie Irving trade, the drama of the Cavs, the Game of Thrones Season 7, Episode 2 that just aired last night, Michael Phelps versus the Great White, and Jordan Spieth winning the British Open. What do you think our crew cares about the most of those four stories?
All right, so I just want to clarify. We're talking about our audience?
Yes.
Okay, so I think Game of Thrones is by far and away number one.
Yep.
Then I think it's, I hate to say it, but, and it doesn't, it may not seem like it right now because it has been 3 days, but I think number two is still Kyrie and the NBA. I mean, the Michael Phelps shark thing, I think it's interesting to say, like, oh, yeah, that sucked. But, I mean, I don't know that anybody even watched it.
Oh, no. The ratings on the Michael Phelps versus the shark are going to come in, and you're going to be like, holy crap.
Oh, especially like, people who have children.
Oh, yeah. I watched it with my kids last night. I was like, I want to see. I mean, and they were all in on it, too. I mean, the pitch of it is golden, right? Like, Michael Phelps is going to race a great white shark. That's a great pitch. Like, that's television gold. Instead of actually letting Michael Phelps race a great white shark in some way, and I don't know how you would have set it up, but I don't know why they couldn't have done it, where they like create a, if they don't want to get, I think I'm correct that we've never had a great white shark in captivity. I don't think that we have ever managed to catch a great white shark and put him in captivity. That is, I don't think there's any aquarium anywhere in the world that has ever had a great white shark. They don't live in captivity. All right. So I understand in theory, at least, oh, it might be too dangerous to be able to hold a great white shark in captivity. But they could have somehow designed a cage, right? Caught a great white shark, had the great white shark on one side of the cage, and then had Michael Phelps on the other and had them try to race head-to-head, right? That, to me, makes perfect sense. They put that seal, that fake seal in the water and try to get the great white to race him to the end of the thing, and then they let the great white just go, and Michael Phelps is safe inside the still the cage apparatus, and we see who won. And you can see the shark going head-to-head against the person. That's pretty cool. Instead, they had Michael Phelps racing against this CGI creation, which was just absolutely an awful decision. It was a disaster.
I guess I'm just thinking among my age group, you know, the sports fans in their 20s, I guarantee you not a single one of my friends even knew that it was on Sunday.
You're totally wrong. You are a broken man to believe that that's the case.
No, guaranteed. Maybe older, you know, the older generation with kids, like you know, like your generation, Clay, maybe they were all into it.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
All right, so you're acting like I'm 64. You're 8 years younger.
Well, but you're in a whole other place. You've got your family. You've got kids. It's like,
I guarantee you.
Okay, kids, you're going to watch him race a shark? Like,
oh, hold on. All right. 28 years old. All right. If you are 28 right now, I'm opening up phone lines. 877-996-6369. Did you watch Michael Phelps race the great white shark last night? Open phone lines. I only want people who are 26 to 30 to call. Justin Cooper says nobody out there in that age group was watching the great white shark against Michael Phelps. I think that there are millions of you who were watching, and we'll take your calls next on the flip side. Also, did you guys see this? Conor McGregor going at it with Draymond Green, trash talk about Mayweather-McGregor. We haven't even mentioned this yet. I do want to hit on that next segment as well, but we're going to load up your phone lines. You can also vote on those four. I'm kind of curious. I'm going to put up a poll question. You can go vote on it on OutKick. Which of these four was the most intriguing last night to you? Which story is the biggest? Michael Phelps versus the great white shark? Is it Game of Thrones season 7 episode 2, everything that happened there? Is it Jordan Spieth winning the U.S. Open, or is it the Kyrie demanding a trade story from the Cavs? Which of those stories do you consider to be the biggest? Which one do you care about the most? I'm going to read your poll results next here on OutKick, and we will also find out how many young men out there who Justin Cooper believes had absolutely zero interest in a shark racing a man. I think he's totally wrong. Am I right? Am I not? If you didn't watch, you can call as well.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Hey, it's Jonas Knox. All right, game off. We got to pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying, flag on the play. You already talked about that, but there's just so much good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for time tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. Unique stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes. Cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. Hilarious emojis for taunting friends when when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their new unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go, so get off the bench and go download it now free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!